Good morning. It's Friday, April 5th. All could stay. The war in the Middle East is now 182 days old. Hard to believe we'll be 6 months into this war on Sunday. I'm Jonathan Shanzer, Senior Vice President for Research at Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Welcome back to the FD Morning Brief. It was a weird day to watch the news out of Israel yesterday. I watched Israeli television for hours, and for hours it was wall-to-wall coverage of a possible Iranian response to the assassination of that senior IRGC official earlier this week. The response never came. It was certainly not the most exciting thing I've experienced, sort of akin to watching paint dry. But these are the sorts of things we do here at the FDD Morning Brief to make sure that you get the news and analysis that you need 3 times a week. Our guest this morning is Roee Case. Roee is the Arab Affairs correspondent for Kan 11, or Channel 11, Israel's national broadcaster. Roee's reporting is nothing short of fabulous. He's one of my favorite journalists in Israel, and I'm just thrilled that he's agreed to join us live today in just a few minutes from now on the FDD Morning Brief. I will warn you, though, we did have some technical difficulties, so let's see if he actually pops up on that screen. But before that, let's talk about actions and consequences, because it seems to me that the world has forgotten some basic things about war. Let's start with the obvious. When Hamas slaughtered 1,200 Israelis on October 7th, there were going to be consequences. The Israelis won't easily forgive or forget, and nor should they. When President Biden rushed to Israel to provide America support to Israel, that had consequences. His anger right now, stemming from Israeli errors on the battlefield, is preposterous. Wars are ugly. Mistakes and miscalculations in war are the rule, not the exception. And Biden knew this going in. Then there's the global outrage. And I'm not just talking about the world's central kitchen convoy. No, the world's furious that Israel is determined to destroy Hamas, even as the group sacrifices the very people it purports to represent. But the world's collective decision to turn a blind eye to Iranian proxy groups like Hamas for decades, that had consequences. The decision to shrug at 75 years of Palestinian irredentism, that had consequences. Tolerating the UN's systemic anti-Israel biases, that had consequences too. This all applies to Israel, of course. Killing a senior IRGC in Syria will elicit an Iranian response. Pulverizing Hamas will have consequences too. This war is escalating. And in war, escalation often yields unintended consequences, and that's rarely a good thing. Righteous indignation may play well in our era of clicks, likes, and reposts, but that does nothing when wars take a turn for the worst. Right now, real-world solutions are urgently needed from both Bibi and Biden to address the threat of Iran and its proxies. They need to stop bickering now, because failure to produce those solutions will have consequences too. Now for your headlines. Headline one. The U.S. Treasury sanctioned a company called OceanLink Maritime DMCC for supporting Iranian smuggling efforts. Once again, we're always glad to see Treasury slapping sanctions on the bad guys, but it must be asked, what good does this do if the United States continues to issue waivers on sanctions that enable the regime to survive the sanctions they impose? And beyond that, there's the question of how effective such financial tools can be over time. This war is decidedly a kinetic one. But the White House is limiting its responses primarily to bureaucratic ones, and that is not going to convince the regime to back down. Tougher measures are going to be needed here if the goal is to halt the regime's ever-widening act of aggression. Headline two, the PLO is trying yet again to become the 194th country recognized by the United Nations. This is definitely not their first go. Back in 2011, the Palestinians launched the campaign they called Palestine 194. The U.S. opposed the measure at the Security Council, so the Palestinians went to the General Assembly and found the support of a large majority of states, except that and $4 barely got them a venti cappuccino at Starbucks. The Palestine 194 campaign never ended. It's paused and unpaused over the years. The goal, of course, is to circumvent negotiations with Israel that would force the PLO to compromise. The administration understands this, and for that reason, it has vowed to veto the measure yet again. Thankfully, it would also be a reward for corruption and terrorism if that went through. And that's something Washington also wants to avoid, I hope. But let's be clear, the world's receptivity to this initiative is greater right now than I have seen it over the past decade. So this is one we're going to need to continue to watch. And headline three, GPS across Israel was disabled yesterday. We saw this at the beginning of the war when Israelis tried to use Waze. Their screens show them on the streets of Beirut. And this was for good reason. There was concern, as there is now, that Hezbollah might fire some of their precision-guided munitions or PGMs into Israel. Those lethal munitions utilize GPS technology, so better to turn it off, the Israelis figured. And now, in the wake of that Israeli airstrike on the most senior IRGC figure since the war began, it seems that the Israelis are playing it safe again. But they've actually stopped playing it safe. The strike in Damascus was daring, and those types of bold moves may be a reflection of where we are right now in the war. Only bigger strikes are going to deter Iran, except they also conflict, which explains the whole GPS shutdown. And that brings us all back to where we started with my thoughts about consequences. This is a dangerous moment all around. Oh, and did I mention that today is Quds Day? That's an Iranian regime manufactured holiday on the last Friday of the month-long holiday of Ramadan, and it's aimed to stoke violence against Israelis. As of right now, relative quiet. That's a good thing. Okay, I'm now pleased to introduce Roi Case from Kan Chatzisrei, Israel's public broadcaster. Roi has some of the best scoops out of Israel when it comes to developments in the broader Arab world. You'll often see me retweeting his work or translating it for an American audience. Thankfully, we won't need to translate Roi here today. He'll speak to us live and in English for the benefit of our esteemed audience here at the FDD Morning Brief. Welcome, Roi Case.
Well, thank you very much, Jonathan, for having me, and thank you for all the compliments. You know, I'm very flattered.
Well, you've earned it. You've earned it. So, Roi, we have maybe about 10 or so minutes with you, so let me get started and just ask you about your background. I mean, how did you get into this business? How did your Arabic get so good? And without, I don't know, sharing secrets, how do you cultivate some of those terrific sources that you have that give you those scoops out of the Arab world?
Yeah, so first of all, again, thank you very much for having me. It's a big pleasure. And I am a big fan of the FDD. And you also, Jonathan, on Twitter. I learned Arabic in high school. You know, it was very unique because I will tell you the truth and to who listen to us that many people in Israel don't, you know, connect to the Arabic language, but I decided that it is my, I don't know if my destiny, but it's my, the good direction, right direction. And after I studied Arabic in high school, I serve in the intelligence in IDF. And then I thought, okay, so in the army, I did it for I will call it the intelligent needs. But now I need to do it. I want to show the people in Israel what they miss about the Arab world. You know, I feel many people in Israel don't know the Arab world and what's going on above the, you know, the borders, behind the borders. And I think to know Arabic, it's very crucial to understand what is going on in the Arab world. You know, you can't understand what is going on in the Arab world and the processes and what the public thinks without knowing the Arabic. You know, it's very basic, but people here, you know, still I feel that not so many people know Arabic as well and try not to do it. And especially after, you know, the 7 October attack, because it, you know, the gaps between Arab and Jews here in Israel always were. But now I think it's more because of the war. And I think my duty is to show something else. And after that, so I entered to the media. I was in Ynet. It's from the newspaper of Yediot Achronot. And after that, before 6 years, I joined to Kan News Channel, one of the biggest channels in Israel. And I'm very proud, you know, to do what I do. I have a lot of passion to the Arab world, and I'm very excited after many years of work, but still, you know. And regarding the sources, you ask about the sources. So, you know, it's Jonathan, it's a bit of process because, you know, you try, it's very important to know what the sources behind the text. What I mean, you know, many times we hear many news in our world that you discover it's not true, because there are not a lot of rumors and a lot of interest. So what I learned that I have to, you know, to examine the source to understand, he lied to me last time or he told the truth. So I think this is the process that I do all the time when I look in the sources in the our world and in our media, because, you know, in the last decade, we saw the development of the social media. You know, it's not when I was in the army, Jonathan, I was, you know, for the TV, the radio, the newspapers, but now it's different. You have a lot of information. And my job is to not just to publish and also to avoid fake news and false news, because there are a lot of that in the out media.
For sure. Well, I thank you for everything that you do. I learn a lot from your Twitter feed and watching you on Khan. So really, I think you do a terrific job. Let me ask you about some of the headlines right now. I want to ask you about that Israeli airstrike in Damascus. You know, obviously Israel's been doing things like this in what you call the campaign between the wars, or Mabam. You've been doing this, the Israelis have been doing this for years, but this was a change, wasn't it? This was probably the biggest strike that Israel has conducted since the war began. Do you think the war changes as a result of that airstrike in Damascus the other day?
Yeah, I think it was a crucial point, and I will explain. We see during the war, Jonathan, there is escalation regarding the attacks of Israel in Syria, attacks that, you know, they are that you see that who is the aim of the attacks, the Iranian regime and the Quds force. I think since the war began, we saw 18 figures from Quds forces, that was killed in during Israel attacks in Syria. I think this attack, Jonathan, was unique in two aspects. One aspect is because it was the most prominent figure in Quds force that Israel killed since the war began. But also the location. You see, the Iranians claim he was a consulate or a diplomatic, you know, diplomatic building. But, you know, it was a compound of the Quds force in Damascus. It's comfortable to them to say it, but it's comfortable also to allocate this military site above, you know, the embassy of Iran. I think that Israel, when it carry out this attack, the location is very unique, because it told Iran to Iran, we see you and we are not hesitate to hurt you, even near the embassy, your embassy in Damascus. You try to pretend this is a, you know, a embassy, but it's not an embassy. It's a quarter. You try to carry out actions against Israel. So I think in this aspect, it's very unique. And I think the Iranians understand it. And I think that Israel, and I take you, if I take you to December, you remember, Jonathan, when Israel killed by the, you know, foreign sources, because now we have censor in Israel, when they killed the Said Razi Mousavi, he was the, you know, the commander in Syria. It was after he went out from his office near the embassy to his building home, to his home in the Sayyida Zainab, near Damascus. So Israel waited that he will come to his house and then targeted him. Now, Israel didn't wait that Zaidi and the other Consonets or the other figures from Kutz Forest will return to the home. And she did it. He did it, you know, near the embassy. And I think it's a very tough, tough message from Israel to Iran. And I think that that is the reason that Iran, what the Iranian afraid, that if Israel escalate its attacks in this way, so it can, you know, it can be even worse. And that's why the Iranians are so compelled to respond and our response and what we hear during today or even today in the Quds good day that, you know, they are celebrating in Iran.
Yeah. Yeah. We're watching that one, but certainly I think we're watching a different level of tension right now than I've seen since the war began. Let me ask you on another thing. I know you follow a lot of news coming out of the Arabian Gulf, specifically the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain and even Saudi Arabia. How do you think the normalization agreements are holding up right now with Israel? And do you think the Saudis are coming next?
So, you know, I want to be optimistic, but, you know, it's not it's a sensitive period. You know, before the 7 October, it seems that we are in the right path to normalization between Israel and Saudi Arabia. But now the situation is more complicated because of the war. I think that, you know, the public opinion, the Arab world, is tend to what's going on in Gaza. I know, and I absolutely know that you know that these regimes that you mentioned don't like Hamas. They see Hamas as you know, a brand of the Islamic Brotherhood that they fought them in their countries in the recent years, but also the images from Gaza regarding, you know, the public opinion, the communities there, it's a big problem from them. So it's very complicated situation. I think that still we have opportunity to proceed the normalization process. You know, maybe we have setback and we have to say it, but Jonathan, I really believe there is hope. And I think maybe we have opportunity to move aside all the extremist forces like Hamas and the other forces like Hezbollah and the Iraqi militias, and, you know, to bring the moderate forces that these countries represent. I really believe it, and I'm not losing my hope, you know, regarding normalization. I think this is a process. And I think, you know, when Hamas did what they did in 7 October, Jonathan, one of the main reasons was to, you know, to destroy all the process of normalization. Because they knew that if there will be normalization between Israel and Saudi Arabia, there will be in trouble regarding the extremist ideas and all this. So I think we still look, and also I hope the Israeli government, the leadership, and also the government in US will look in the bigger picture, because we have to save this normalization. This is, I think, the hope of all region against Iran and their proxies.
I think you're right. And I share your optimism. I'm maybe also sharing a little bit of the skepticism, too, that I think I hear from you. Real quick, last question for you. I want to just ask you about those relationships with Jordan and Egypt. These are the older peace agreements, and they seem to be very shaky right now. They don't seem as solid. What is your take on what's happening in those two countries?
It's a very important question, you know, because it's bitter ironic, Jonathan, because, you know, before the 7th October, we felt that maybe our relationship as Israelis with the Gulf state and another state are warmer than the relationship with Egypt and Jordan. The problem is the normalization people to people. the public opinion in Jordan and Egypt, because they are close to the all the Palestinian issue. So when there is an escalation, and especially if we witness to a war that now prolonged for half an year, so you know the people are frustrated. They see the picture from Gaza, but we have to remember. I think President Sisi and also the King Abdullah, His Majesty, know exactly is Hamas, and know that if Hamas stay and win, it can influence on them. Jonathan, we just seen Jordan. See what is going on there in the recent days. There are protests near the Israeli embassy. Hamas tried to, you know, to escalate. Also the Iranians, we heard what the Iraqi militias said. What they said in the recent day, they said, we are ready to give weapon to thousands of warriors in Jordan that will open new front against Israel from Jordan. I think the Jordan king know exactly that this is development, Jonathan, can risk his reign. He's reigning Jordan. He's controlling Jordan. So I think there are still a lot of common interests between the leadership. Between the leadership of Israel and Jordan and Egypt, although there are gaps, and we have to say, but the problem, Jonathan, is the public opinion. Still, there is a great gap between the public opinion and the leadership. The leadership in Cairo and Rabat in Amman know exactly what the interests are, how much it's important to. And save and preserve the relationship between Israel and these countries, but still the public opinion influence and cause also to the Jordan leadership and Egypt leadership to escalate their rhetoric against Israel. I hope that everyone, also here in Israel and also in Jordan and Egypt, will be clever to proceed and. Because the peace agreements between the two countries very important to our region. You know, the Iranians, what did dream, Jordan? They dream to control with militias in Jordan. And if they will control with militia in Jordan, we will be in problem, and all the region will be a problem. That's why we see in recent days also Jordan changed the rhetoric. You see, they blame Hamas, also the Iranians, regarding the demonstrations, and also we see Arab countries that say we stand with Jordan against this. You know, I think, Jonathan, we have to look very carefully in this development, also in Jordan, also in Egypt, and because even if the peace is not warm. Okay, such as the peace was with the Gulf countries, I think it's so crucial and so important because we have the longest border with Jordan. Describe yourself what will be if there will be another reign there, an Islamist extremist leadership there. What we will do?
It would be a disaster. It would be.
It will be a disaster.
Yes, complete disaster. Well, Roei Case, we've run out of time, but I want to thank you for joining us today on the FTD Morning Brief. Keep up the great work over there at Khan 11.
Thank you, Jonathan.
And Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. Thank you very much for having me. It was a great pleasure.
Thank you. Okay, here's what FTD has on tap for you today. My colleagues are out with the April edition of the Biden Administration Foreign Policy Tracker, which takes a look at the trend lines of the administration's policies across 16 different issue areas. Our team highlights a good number of areas where the administration needs a serious course correction, from Iran to Lebanon to Korea and nonproliferation. But there are some bright spots too, including executive orders and designations to shore up our defenses against cyber attacks. Balls and Strikes, as always, from my FDD colleagues here, and I encourage you to check it out. Again, that product is called the FDD Foreign Policy Tracker. FDD Senior Fellow Cleo Pascal has a new piece out on the renegotiation of the Compacts of Free Trade Association, or COFA, between the U.S., Palau, the Federated States of Micronesia, and the Republic of the Marshall Islands. After years of negotiation, Compact 3 was signed into law last month and is expected to be fully approved within weeks after a public consultation period. Cleo's piece explores the immense mutual benefits that build and nurture the bond amongst our four nations through COFA and why this is a vital step to protect U.S. interests in a region that Beijing is actively trying to control. And finally, FDD's Ruel Marc-Erect and Ray Takei from the Foreign Council on Foreign Relations have a new piece in the Free Press on the gains made by Iran during Israel's war in Gaza. As Hamas, the Houthis, and Hezbollah continue to trade fire with Israel and America in the region, the IRGC is sitting pretty in Tehran. Ruel and Ray argue that Israel and the United States assert that only military action against Iran has a chance of curbing the regime's escalations. Okay, that's another episode down and another week in the books. Read our expert analysis on our website, fdd.org. Read our quick takes on X at FDD. And support our work with a tax-deductible donation at fdd.org/invest. Tune in Monday for another episode of the FDD Morning Brief. Have a terrific weekend. I'm Jonathan Shanzer, signing off for FDD.